Welcome to the Umbrella Hour, hosted by Dr. On, clinical sexologist, and Xander Keg, licensed clinical social worker. The Umbrella Hour features insightful, provocative, and inspiring interviews that examine the lives of LGBT people from diverse vantage points. Xander has a guest to introduce to us this hour.
Yes, I do, On. Thank you so much. Well, our guest today is Eva Karolova. Eva is a writer from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. She explores the impacts of gender ideology on society for publications Gender Dissent, The Distance, Reality's Last Stand, Redux, and her own Substack. She enjoys running away to the Rocky Mountains with her wife and their dog when not writing. Welcome to the show, Eva.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Let's just dive into a really bland talking topic. What got you interested in exploring gender ideology? What got you involved in wanting to explore that?
So it was a slow process to come to it. It's been since late 2018 where it got on my radar as this thing that was happening in society. Prior to that, I was just a millennial lesbian. I wasn't super progressive or anything, but I just went along with it. I agreed with trans women are women on the surface is like a social nicety. I never fully went down the rabbit hole of believing this was a literal truth. But I think as I started to realize that there were people who meant it very literally and who were really trying to push to change a lot of policies and laws, I started to realize, oh, there's actually something really here. First, I would start seeing that there would be men competing in women's sports and thinking to myself, I have this one very specific memory of seeing a Facebook headline story of that cyclist, Rachel McKinnon, winning. And I thought to myself, oh, there's going to be all these bigots in the comments that won't be happy with this. And then I was honest with myself and I said, well, I'm not really happy with this. So then that was my first clue that I was starting to see something was wrong. And then there was issues surrounding language about how the word lesbian was going to have to change its meaning to be more inclusive. And that didn't sit right with me either. But it wasn't until I started to hear more about trans kids, this idea of trans kids, then I started to become quite uncomfortable with what was going on because I myself was quite a gender nonconforming child. And I thought, well, if this was me today, then I could be considered a trans kid. I remember sitting my partner down one time, this was maybe 2019. Don't you think this is a bit strange? Don't you think it would have been us when we were younger? Because she was like that too. And well, no, this is different. Like, yeah, you're right. This is different. But I kept thinking, how is this any different? That really would have been us. And so just these little things over time. And I always thought I was just this secret bigot. I wasn't getting it. I'm like a bad person, right? And then finally, I stumbled upon the gender critical subreddit, which that subreddit has been banned for years now. You can't talk about that stuff. Just to see other people critiquing this stuff and having the same questions I have and bringing it up. And I guess especially seeing other, mostly other women doing it. Because I think I always thought, well, there's these right-wing bigoted men that don't like trans people. But just to see that there was these concerns being raised, oh, I'm not alone. I'm not particularly bad. And after that, the dam just broke and felt way more free to express that I had problems and concerns about this stuff as well. So that's what got me initially interested.
Eva, when you say gender critical, can you explain that a little bit more for the listener to understand what you mean by that?
It's a broad term. I mean, I don't even know. It's so contentious lately, but basically the way I see it, I think the way, let's say, radical feminists see it is you're critical of gender roles and gender as a social construct. I don't quite take that approach. To me, it's being critical of gender ideology itself, being critical of the idea that there's this gender identity separate from your sex and is more important than sex in some situations. I see that term as a very broad, all-encompassing term for this movement, as we can call it, is just being critical of gender identity ideology and the ideas surrounding that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You became interested in exploring gender identity, and then you started looking at what you perceive to be its impact on society. Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through that?
So basically, I just started seeing that people were pushing to take this concept of gender identity. So the idea that man feels like a woman or a woman feels like a man as more important than actual sex, than actual just biological reality. And so, well, there's clearly an impasse there in very many situations. And some concrete examples of that, one of the first that I noticed was in the realm of sports. Because if you put a man into a women's sports team or a sports league or sports competition, that's quite an unfair advantage to be a male competing against females. And so that was one example of where it seemed this idea of gender identity, of the way somebody just feels and identifies, was taking precedence over one's physical, biological sex. And that was one of the first things that struck me as just incredibly unfair and really just throwing all common sense out the window. The reason we have competition segregated by sex was not because of how people feel and or how their personalities are. It's literally because of the types of bodies they have. And then another really significant area that I have been quite active in terms of doing protests and writing is the fact that many places in the Western world, Canada, US, UK, Australia, are now placing male prisoners, often quite violent ones, into women's prisons. I don't quite remember when I first heard about that. It must have been after I got into this debate and discussion. And it just seems so ridiculous that in Canada, this has been happening since 2015 on a provincial level, since 2017 on a federal level. And when I do my protests or write about it or speak about it, most people still don't believe me because they think there's no way that this could be happening because it just seems so unsafe and unfair. And it does happen. And there's some really crazy stories out of Canada of the transfer of these kinds of prisoners. So to me, again, that's another thing that is a huge impact on the most vulnerable women in society. And then just on a more everyday level, women's changing rooms, just not having the right to have those sex segregated spaces anymore. In some of my journalistic work, I've talked to women. One woman in particular, her daughter had gone into a changing room and there was this man watching her change. And so she went to the front desk staff and told them about this. And they were basically saying, if police come to deal with this, you are going to be the one in trouble because this person identifies as a woman. And it was just a whole mess of a situation. Yeah, it was terrible. And I hear about stories like that all the time. And then I think the biggest thing that I myself have explored, spoken about publicly and done things about is the impact on children mostly, because like I said, that really pulled me in. So the way that kids are being captured by this ideology, that they are being made to believe these very false and ideological things about sex and gender and about their identities, and then being led down a path of identifying as trans and then potentially going on to have medical interventions, potentially ending up sterilized, lacking sexual function. It's increasing at such a crazy rate, especially among young girls. Those are the main areas that I personally look at and speak about and talk about, with really a special focus on kids and how it infiltrates schools.
With the CAS review coming out of the UK, the National Health Services commissioned review that took 4 years to write, Dr. Hilary CAS, it was all focused on pediatrics, right? Mm-hmm. She's a pediatrician. It was focused on children. And there's a lot in there. I know that in Canada and in the United States, we're nowhere near accepting anything from that review. I heard that there is a bit more back and forth in Australia. You said earlier about how the redefinition of the word or the identity of lesbian, it reminded me within the last year or two, I looked on a university, a United States university website, and it had the definition of some terms. If you're talking on LGBT topics, here are some terms and here are the definitions. And it defined a lesbian as, quote, non-man attracted to non-man.
Yeah, that's the best.
But it didn't change gay man's description to be non-woman attracted to non-woman. That was still right. Man attracted to man. And lesbian was non-man attracted to non-man. And I thought, what the heck does that mean? Right? I mean, I know you know that I'm a trans man. An's a trans man. We did our transitions medically, socially as adults. And we don't have some of those problems with sterility and that come from the early childhood medications.
Yeah.
Until that point, I was lesbian. I was in relationship with the same woman I'm in relationship now, 22 years later.
Aww.
And so, yeah, thank you. And so I say to some people, my transition wasn't really female to male because my sex is still female. I say my transition was dyke to dude. The inner dyke in me is really offended by this description.
Yeah.
His definition, I mean, of lesbian as non-man attracted to non-man. I mean, it makes no sense. Mm-hmm. It's crazy making. It's almost like a gaslit definition.
I wrote a piece one time about how people just don't want to be lied to. I think we were heading in a positive direction where as long as everyone's honest about everything that's going on and what you're doing and how you're transitioning, as long as you're not making people believe that I have actually changed sex and you have to believe this too. I think a lot of people were okay to live and let live. I know I am. It's just that people get really upset when they feel they've been pushed too far and they're having to accept lies and non-truths, and when basic words that we know the meaning of are getting redefined. The lesbian issue was one of the first ones that impacted me because I am a lesbian. And this idea that it's just non-man attracted to non-men and the centering of men in that definition is so strange because it just doesn't factor in at all. I think gender ideology impacts everyone, but there is unbalanced effect it has against women. And then as by virtue of that, it also impacts lesbians more. People come for that category. People are trying to problematize it and make it blurry and not have actual definitions just so that men can identify that way too. And so that was quite a personal thing for me too. I've been with my partner for 17 years. So it is something that is very near and dear to me. And yeah, and I think it was the silly article in 2018 in BuzzFeed. It was just, can lesbians survive the new sexual revolution? And I'm just reading it. And I don't know why that didn't pique me right then and there. I was hanging on that this was just some radical fringe idea. And now, how many years, 6 years later, no, that's the mainstream. And so it sucks to have seen it coming. And here we are now.
I think another category of people that are harmed by this gender ideology are trans people ourselves.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you meet a transsexual, they know that their sex hasn't changed, but we know that we've taken medications or we've had surgeries and we've adopted maybe certain styles of dress or hairstyles. And for trans men, we don't have to do anything to affect our voice. That's just the testosterone. But other people might go through voice coaching. So we know we're doing something in order to fit into a social role, in order to just live our lives, which is very different from somebody maybe who's non-binary or transgender who wants to be more visible in the world. As a lesbian, I was very androgynous. And so I was quite visible as a masculine woman for my entire adolescence and my adulthood until I was on testosterone for 3 years and then was visibly being interpreted as a man socially. So I get it. I get how uncomfortable that is. And so in some ways, my experience is going to be different from An's experience when we go out into the world, right? Because we're audio only, so the listener can't see us. But we're both trans men, but we project a different visual to the world. We sound different, right? And so that does make a difference in how people see us, how they interpret us and how they treat us. I'm not ignorant to those things. And I know that it's going to have an effect on trans people who are early in transition. They're going to have very different experiences. But it doesn't make any sense to me to withhold from the public when there are things happening. It's one thing to put somebody like Laverne Cox into the prison. That happens. Just your average everyday trans woman who's in prison and gets transferred over. But we're talking about the ones who are serial sex offenders.
Rapists, and who really are just doing it to get access to their...
And they transfer. And we don't even know if their identity is legitimate because it's all self-identification. I just heard yesterday, and I don't think this is in the news outside of Florida, and it hasn't been mainstream big news in Florida, but just within the last couple of days, a 16-year-old trans girl killed her mother and the mother's boyfriend. That's not really making the news. And I think there was another trans girl in, I think, Colorado or someplace that they stopped before they actually did the murdering, but they don't want to talk about that. And so I get it. It reminds me of when I was a young lesbian and bringing a lot of attention to domestic violence or interpersonal violence in the lesbian community, because I was in a relationship with somebody who was abusive. And it was not a comfortable thing to talk about.
Yeah.
The lesbian community did not want to hear about it because that was what straight people did, and men in particular. They didn't want to hear that it was happening in our own community. So I get it. I get that there is certain dirty laundry that we don't want shared publicly because we were worried that we wouldn't get the right to adopt children and get married. Right. This is before that. This is
because
that'll
be
80s.
Used against us. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I get it. I get that's why there's probably some things that don't get publicity. But because people don't hear about it, they think it's not happening, which is what I think you were alluding to. They think people are making it up.
Oh,
when
yeah.
They, say
they don't believe
like
me.
That.
Yeah. They don't believe me. Yeah. We'll be on the streets trying to raise awareness, and people just don't want to believe that it's going on because some of it is just so ridiculous. But then because it is pushed to such a ridiculous point, that's why I am very much scared of a blowback against all of the rest of us, against gays and lesbians and transsexual people who were integrated into society, because now people think that all those crazy radical people pushing the very crazy reforms are representing us. And I do worry for just regular transsexual people. I think, in my opinion, a lot of people like to separate LGB and T, cut the TQ away and all this. But the main difference for me is between people who just want to live their lives and integrate into society, don't want people to have to believe in lies, and then on the other side, people who this is about validation and the need for external validation and the need to, a guy wakes up one day and says, well, I feel like a woman, so everybody has to use these pronouns, I have to access into these spaces. I think that's a completely different mindset. And those are the people I have a problem with, the people who are trying to force the rest of society to play a game with them, as opposed to being like, okay, this is how I want to live my life. This is how I want people to see me. So I have to put in that effort. And I have to, it's just like how within the gay movement itself, there were these two strands. There was the assimilationists who want to integrate in with everybody else. And gay marriage was a huge part of that. It was a big goal of that. And then there was this more radical strand that was, well, no, we're different. We're homosexuals. We shouldn't be emulating straight people. We can have our own lives. We can have more sexual freedom, this and that, right? And it was the assimilationists who won, and we ended up civil rights and gay marriage, and everything seemed good for a while. And then now, sadly, I feel like it's the radicals that are winning and representing us and threatening all the goodwill that we've built, and even transsexual people as well. I guess time went on, people became more open and they were more understanding. But then when they're faced with men and women's sports and rapists in women's prisons and people medicalizing children, then they just decide, okay, well, I understand. They don't have the time and capacity to parse all these little differences and just be like, okay, these are the good guys, these are the bad guys. They're just like, to hell with all of you. And yeah. I can understand. I don't give them credence. You should not hate everybody, but it's especially parents. I get it. The gays and the trans just got to go because they're just messing everything up. And so a part of what I do and talk about and write about is I'm just trying so hard to push back against that. We want to integrate into society, and not all of us are like this.
I teach hormones, and in my classes, I do raise those concerns. I also get into the mental health aspect of it, because we know that once people start taking hormones, it could potentially unleash a mental comorbid situation that maybe would have never been unleashed. We don't really know, because we have studies in some areas, but we don't have studies in every area. I also remind people, never say never, never, please say never, because it'll come back and it'll bite you.
It will.
And it has bitten a number of people who, and I saw this also with the HRO here in Jacksonville when we were fighting for trans rights, not just LGB rights, but just basic human rights. And we would hear those statements and I would cringe. Yes, there are murderers. And yes, we happen to be part of that crowd. We can't say lesbians, gays, bis, and trans people don't murder, or they're not sex offenders. We cannot make those statements.
No.
We don't have enough information.
Mm-hmm. And if you do make those statements, all you're doing is create a community that provides cover for predators. Just like the woman who told me the story of the man in the change room watching her daughter, and then the staff says, well, we can't kick him out, and the police come, you'll be in trouble. That man, he's not a transsexual. In fact, later on, I found out he had a history of just child abuse. He just saw a loophole. If I say I'm a woman, I go in here, I can sit there, I can watch these girls change, and then nobody can challenge me, because there's just this narrative that nobody would ever take on a trans identity to get into a women's prison or just to get into women's sports or something like that. Then you're going to attract predators.
The whole thing is disconcerting to me, because if there was a female staring, nothing to do with trans, that would be an issue.
Yeah, there would be.
That would be no different from a trans female staring at you or your child. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. It would just be voyeurism, regardless of. Yeah. Why wouldn't voyeurism be something that the police would be interested in being alerted to,
exactly,
regardless of the identity of the person doing it?
Because especially in Canada here, everyone is so scared of running afoul of the Human Rights Code, which is just a weird interpretation of it, because the Human Rights Code is there to protect the person. Because every single province in our country and the federal government itself has amended the code to put in gender identity and gender expression. Personally, I feel like these things could have been covered under sex. People can be gender nonconforming and be protected under that. Nevertheless, if these categories had to make their way into our human rights codes, they didn't have to be interpreted in this crazy way they're being interpreted in. They still could have been used to protect people who, let's say, a biological male wanting to wear a dress or things like that. They could have been used to protect them in employment situations, housing situations. Sure, maybe it's okay that we put them in there. But the way it's being interpreted, well, we have to transfer that rapist into the female prison because he says he's a woman. Because never in these codes was the terms gender identity, gender expression, they were never even defined. And so that's what's created the huge mess we have up here in Canada right now, even in the schools, because the reason the schools have to have these SOGI education policies, which stands for sexual orientation and gender identity, it's a very hot topic right now among parents and stuff. The reason we have to have these programs is to be in line with the human rights codes.
We are going to take our first commercial break. This is Dr. On with Xander Keg. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour, and our guest this hour is Ava Kurilova. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet, mix with water, and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home, or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colors or preservatives, just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active, super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. This is Dr. On with Xander Keg. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour. Our guest this hour is Ava Kurilova. Let's get back to where we left off.
And so they come in under the guise of anti-bullying, teaching just basic human rights. And then what happens is these little children are taught that they can identify as the opposite sex. And they're encouraged, like so many kids are identifying as non-binary young children, elementary school age children. And even in the discussion of sexual orientation, the discussions get far too sexual. It isn't just a basic, okay, some people are gay, some people are straight. And so now you have this situation where parents are getting quite upset because they're finally realizing what's being taught in schools. A lot of parents during COVID could see in the Zoom classes what was going on, and they're shocked and they're getting angry, and it's creating a blowback. And I've been saying lately, in Canada, we got gay marriage in 2005, and so it's been quite a while now, and never has there been a concerted effort to repeal it. But the way things are going and how angry people are getting, I wouldn't be surprised if within a few years we have a movement. We need to repeal all these human rights protections. We need to get rid of gay marriage because you've targeted our children and you promised you wouldn't. So it's to watch it.
Well, it's that slippery slope argument that they used to make, right?
Proving them
right.
If
we let gay people marry each other, what comes next, right? They used to always have the worst case scenarios.
Yeah.
I won't even go into it because they were just so ridiculous. But I could imagine that there are people who are saying, see, we told you, we told you this would happen. Yeah, it is a little crazy. You mentioned before, you referred to them as the crazy radicals, right? We've had guests on the show before. We've talked about the radicals on the left and the radicals on the right. They're probably all total about 15% of the adult population. So they're the minority, but they're very loud. They get a lot of attention. We had a guest on not that long ago, Jonathan Rauch from the Brookings Institute. And he was part of the gay rights movement in the 90s to separate from the queer rights movement to attempt to secure and successfully did our same-sex marriage law, what we got from the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act, and then also the ability in all 50 states to adopt children as a gay and lesbian couple, and also active military service for gay and lesbian and bisexual people. So they were very successful in that, but they had to wrestle it away. Mm-hmm. And I learned recently that one of the things that Jonathan did was he sought out the connection with a member of Focus on the Family, which was very involved in the religious right.
Yeah.
They're in Colorado Springs in the state of Colorado. He intentionally built a bridge to this individual and had ongoing conversations, and they're still connected in an attempt to be, okay, what are your concerns? These are our concerns.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want? Well, this is what we want. And they just kept back and forth, having a dialogue with each other instead of dehumanizing each other or each other's groups of people, right? The Christians and the mm-hmm. gays. I said to him then, and I've said to a few other guests, maybe it's time that we do that again, that we wrestle away the mainstream movement for rights from the minority group that wants to just break everything down, break down the family, break down the systems, break down biology, break it all down. Yep. And nobody has said no. Everybody's been, but the question I always pose is, well, how do we do it?
Yeah.
How do we do it? Because we are the majority. So what do we do? And we have the internet now. They didn't have that in the 90s. How do we do it? I think there's enough people to do it, but how do we organize to do it? Have you thought about that?
Well, one thing that gives me hope in Canada, as much as I see perhaps disaster coming, I think that a lot of just regular gay and transsexual people are doing a lot on the conservative side, our conservative parties here in Canada, which aren't all that right wing. Without this issue, I tend to lean more politically conservative just in terms of the Canadian landscape. There's a lot of us who are just moderate gay people who have found a place there. I've consulted with the Premier of Alberta, who is a Conservative Party. I'm building connections there because these are the parties that are going to hopefully help restore some sanity before we get to a point where we're taking back gay marriage. Our Premier, Danielle Smith, I think in the fall is going to hopefully introduce some legislation that tackles the medicalization of children, women's sports, not prisons, I don't think, but issues like that. And so hopefully if we can do that and just restore some sanity, then we're going to be able to reach a truce again, is what I'm hoping for. Like I said, politically, I had already supported her prior to her talking about this issue, but nobody on the left was going to listen to us. Nobody on the left was going to consult with us. Nobody was going to speak to us, right? I would have, even if that's not really my party, I would have gladly spoken to and consulted with people, but that's not who reached out. Back in November of 2023, I was lucky enough, I didn't see this coming at all, along with two other friends, one of who is Lois Cardinal, my best friend, who's also a transsexual. We got to consult with Daniel Smith for just a short while, just 45 minutes, but we got to speak our concerns about everything that's happening. And Lois is an adult who transitioned when she was 19, so was an adult, but she does have some significant regrets and now medical issues because of that. So that was one of the things she brought up with the premier to say, like, okay, we do need actual health and mental health supports, even for adults in this province. And aside from that, we also really were just driving home what's happening in schools and what's happening with kids and how these rates are increasing and how the hospitals are just going by self-ID, which I think she was already quite aware, and she did consult with many more people than us. But then a few months later, end of January, she released this long video, here are these policies that we're going to propose. And it was just so cool to see. I think it was prior to that in Canada, a couple of other provinces were starting to tackle this issue, but they were mostly just looking at schools. And these were also provinces with conservative premiers. But she took it way further. She started to tackle all these other things that we had talked about and that other people had talked to her about. She also spoke with my wonderful friend, Linda Blade, who is the former president of Athletics Alberta. So that's where the sports stuff came in. And of course, there's crazy blowback. Really, really histrionic blowback. But for the most part, these policies are popular among people. People want to see this. People want to have this proposed. And so I do hope that those come in. I know that the government has still been consulting and really trying to get this right. And they try. I was in the room when they had reached out to a lot of very progressive leftist gay pride organizations at this roundtable. That did not go well. But they're reaching out. They're trying to have them discuss these things versus, for example, at one point, Justin Trudeau, our prime minister, had come to Alberta to meet with these organizations, but he only met with people on his side. He didn't meet with people like me. He didn't meet with people who were dissenting, right? So I think currently in our landscape, it is just the one side that is willing to listen to everyone. And so it does give me hope. And I hope that that's going to prevent the backlash that I've been fearing for a little while now, if we can just restore some sanity to everything by working with conservatives.
Well, and Trudeau is the leader of your nation.
Yeah.
Not just the people who ideologically agree with him. So it's strange to not meet. I was reading recently that it was, I believe, in the late 60s or early 70s. It might have been in the 70s when a union made up of student activists came up with this concept of no platforming. Oh. And so this idea that we can't platform bad ideas. So we can't have people come on campus mm-hmm. with bad ideas because we don't want those bad ideas to get any airtime. People who were trained through community organizing, they got involved in community stuff and they went through community organizing training, whether officially or unofficially. This concept of deplatforming, whether they call it that or not, is, I think, still very present mm-hmm. in the community organizing space. And so this idea on college campuses of not having somebody come on who has abhorrent beliefs, or the leader of the whole nation not having a conversation with somebody that thinks differently from them. Here in the United States, if you go to a, say, a city council meeting and you're expressing concerns and you're challenging the decisions of the members of the city council, including the mayor, they'll try and shut you down. But we have the right as mm-hmm. citizens to condemn our leaders to their face publicly. So when they get told that they need to sit down and shut up or the police are going to take them out, they can just file a lawsuit and they'll win because government's not allowed to do that. So we have different laws in here than in Canada.
Yes, I was about to say, it's not that great here.
It's so unfortunate. I'm involved with an organization called Braver Angels. Have you heard about Braver Angels?
No, I don't think I have.
So Braver Angels was started in 2017, directly after the election results between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump and the chaos that it was causing in our society and in our communities and in our families. And so it was four individuals. One is a marriage and family therapist, and another one who was a Democratic leader strategist, and then a couple of other people. And they got together to say, what can we do? How can we deal with this? And they ran a workshop called Finding Common Ground in Ohio. People can see it on YouTube because they filmed it because they wanted to show how you could take people who voted for Hillary Clinton and people who voted for Donald Trump and are sworn enemies of each other, and how they could go through a two-day training. And at the end of that two-day training, I mean, it's not like they're all going to invite each other for Sunday dinner, but the hate, the vitriol, the mm-hmm. distrust, all of that, you could see it fading away. Because they were connecting with each other and developing relationships with each other. And so I got involved on the very limited basis back then, basically getting their newsletter. But in the last couple of years, I've been way more involved. And I love it because it's based on this idea that we can depolarize within our families, within our communities, within our states, within our provinces, within our nation, within mm-hmm. our world. There's Braver Angels all over Canada. We get together every couple of years for a convention. Yeah, I like to tell people about it because at braverangels.org, if people really want to be invested in doing something at their community level, that might be an option for them. Instead mm-hmm. of reinventing the wheel, just plug into something that's already happening mm-hmm. and then coming together with connecting Braver Angels into all the other little local groups and seeing what can be done. Hey, Braver Angels, can you bring a depolarizing within workshop to my community? I thought about doing a depolarizing within workshop for social workers. All these are hot topics mm-hmm. in the field of social work. We could do one for the LGBT community. We could do just one Finding Common Ground just in the trans community. But I also think that we'd have a similar issue. There'd be a whole section of people who would never come. They would mm-hmm. never attend something like that. I hope that we get to a place where that is less and less of an issue because we got to come together. It's not going to work this way for much longer.
No, we have to
all
be able to talk.
All this splintering and fracturing. Yep.
Yeah, we have to be able to talk and to bring down the level of the rhetoric in all of these conversations. Like I said, there was quite a reaction to Danielle Smith and the proposed policies. And that reaction consisted mainly of, you're going to make kids kill themselves. That's how extreme it was. She was getting so much of that, so much hate, when it was just so many sensible proposals, if you could really sit down and talk about it. And in February, I also took part in this roundtable discussion about the policies. It wasn't with the premier, there was a minister there. There was actually only three people from my side that was in support of these policies. The rest of the people, a good 7 or 8 of them, were representing mainstream gay and trans organizations. So by mainstream, of course, quite progressive and very much against this stuff. Anyway, I was happy to take part. I thought, oh, a great chance to sit and talk in person. I think it's so important to be able to talk, even if I disagree with these people. And most of them were good. Like, most of them, obviously, we disagree, but they were willing to sit there and be respectful. And I thought that could have gone positively. But there were 2 or 3 of them that were just, yeah, flinging these accusations, just like, you're going to make kids kill themselves and you should resign, telling to the minister and talking about the premier. And they're just, you have to resign. This is awful. They were hogging the conversation. It was hard to get a word. And I tried a few times, and I've described it since as Twitter in real life, because I thought, at least in real life, if you're face to face, you could keep some decorum. And then afterwards, we talked to the minister, like, that was so crazy. And she holds these roundtable discussions off, and she's like, I don't usually get yelled at to resign. It was just so heightened, and it was just so crazy. And it was interesting to take part, because now you see that people feel comfortable taking that kind of online level of rhetoric in person. And yeah, so that was fun. And that was the government actually extending a hand and saying, come talk to us. And in fact, a lot of the people on the other side were complaining that there should have been a lot of other groups there. First of all, like I said, they outnumbered us. There should have been this organization and this organization. And the guy who had organized it, he said, I reached out to all of those. They didn't want to come. They didn't want to talk to the conservative government. They've blacklisted them. They're not going to show up, right? So even if you extend it, well, no, you're not. You're beneath me. You're not worth my time, right? And then, funny, when Justin Trudeau came to town a couple of weeks later, he met with basically all those same people, but not us three who were on the other side. So we saw this photo and we were laughing. How obvious of a snub, right? I wouldn't have wanted to speak to him. I don't like him, but I was go to get my words in, and hopefully I would have been respectful, right? It's just so, so important to know how to talk to each other. Even online, I'm not a total jerk, but I'm trying very hard to bring down to keep calm and be able to just have rational conversation. That's what it's going to take to just convince more people, because people who are on the fence and who just hear that there's these poor suffering trans kids are not getting the care they need. If you come out swinging and you call them a groomer or a child mutilator or something, that you push them away. So you have to model that, being able to discuss this. And if you can actually talk about it, like, my strategy just in my life, friends and family and stuff, it's never to just come out like that. I'm open about my views and my opinion and what I think. And then, sure enough, I have all the faith that they're going to encounter this out in the world on their own. And when they do, and when they start to question it, they're going to think of me and they're going to come and have a discussion, which has happened many times. I don't even feel like I have to push, because as long as you just make yourself that person and you plant that seed, they're going to come talk to you. So that's how I try to approach it, and to keep things from spiraling out of control and anger and vitriol and things like that.
I also think, though, that we have a lot of copycats and whatever's popular, and mm-hmm. people are really not presenting themselves in their authentic moment. They're looking around and hanging on to what's popular. So the whole idea of groupthink is very powerful, particularly mm-hmm. now more than anything. Yeah. And it's disconcerting, because we need more leaders to show that we can do this differently, as mm-hmm. the two of you are talking about, and many others that we've had on our show. We do need to set an example. And I think one of the things that really resonated with me was when Jonathan Rauch said, we really had to start writing, or at least start representing who we are, opposed to having allies who mm-hmm. don't get who we are, doing all that on our behalf. Historically, while we have had some reliability on allies, we've also had a lot of damage done by allies. And mm-hmm. I think that he had a really, truly valid point in saying, it has to come from you. You have to start addressing this. Mm-hmm. But I like Xander's question. How do we begin? Xander has a Substack. I have a WordPress, and I've been all over the map on that, because I started off with all kinds of opinions. And then over time, changed how I felt about life, and my views morphed into, I think, a growth pattern, because that's what happens when you're new at something. You have to develop your sensibilities, and you can't always do that overnight. I have been thinking about it. I'm glad you're writing, and I think we do need to be able to have these conversations mm-hmm. for sure. Yeah.
I think the idea of not letting other people speak for us is something that's been really huge on my radar lately. In my crosshairs has been really progressive political allies who are pretending that they speak to us, LGBT community. Because not that I understand that the right can be just as radical and they're actually a threat to us, but that's why I'm hammering so hard on the leftist politicians to stop creating this atmosphere that's brewing a backlash. One of the few times when I'm on X, Twitter, where I see genuine homophobic and transphobic comments is when you'll get these politicians doing these big virtue signaling stunts about Pride Month, especially. And then you'll get just comment after comment of people just being really, really sick of it. Why do they need a whole month? Why do they need a whole season? Here in Alberta, our NDP, our leftist party, they flew this massive progressive pride flag from the government building 3 stories and they all stood in front of it. And those stunts at the moment, I feel are just really pushing people further away because they're like, why does this group get this special treatment, this special attention? And very few of these people are gay or trans. They're just allies speaking for us. And in fact, I feel like they're using our community because they're trying to make us be very, very, very scared of the other side so that we vote for them. And if there isn't actually anything to be scared of, especially here in Canada, there is no conservative platform that actually is even chasing gay marriage or anything, then they'll just try to make us believe that we should be scared. Our opposition party leader to Justin Trudeau, Pierre Poilievre, he's said nothing. He has a gay dad. He doesn't want to attack any of these things, but the Liberal Party, to scare us, is constantly fear-mongering that 20 years ago he voted against gay marriage. It's like, well, Obama didn't come out for it till 2012.
We are going to take our second commercial break. This is Dr. On with Xander Keg. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour. Our guest is Ava Kurilova. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with NasalGuard for pet lovers. NasalGuard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair, and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try NasalGuard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about NasalGuard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. Our guest is Ava Kurilova. Let's get back to where we left off.
They're just trying to create this atmosphere where everyone's so scared and then the left is digging their heels in. That's why I'm writing my Substack too. I do realize I'm not alone. There's you guys, there's a lot of other people, but I do still feel like in terms of the broader sort of gay community, I do still feel like a minority. Not if people were really to explore their views, I don't think, but I do still think I am. And so that's why I just want to put that out there and just be like, here's this other way. We're not all like this. Here's another way to be a bit more moderate and try and push back against the radical elements that are ultimately going to hurt us really, really badly. I really do believe that. And so it is important to not just speak for myself, but make connections. In Canada, it's tough geographically, but we do have some really amazing groups. I'm a member of COSBAR. It's Canadian Women's Sex-Based Rights. A lot of wonderful women are a part of that group. In fact, just this past March, we held an event in Toronto, which was like the inaugural Reality-Based Women Unite event. And I was on the panel of speakers and we had a big event hall rented out and there was a bunch of us and we sold a lot of tickets. The room was full. It was amazing. I was so scared to speak. I was so scared, but once I got up there and I just saw everyone, it was really, really easy. And I spoke mostly about kids and SOGI education. And that was just really cool to see happening in Canada, happening in Toronto. We didn't have an issue with protesters. probably because we kept the location secret till the day of. But here in Canada, we have to be careful. People have tried to hold events in the past, and the level of protesters that come out and the insanity that results is actually really scary. So we did take steps to protect ourselves. But just to be able to do that felt so huge. I actually wouldn't have thought we would get there in 2024, even, because I didn't think things would really start changing until Trudeau was gone. But to see the conversation having reached such a high level it has now, like politically, especially with what Danielle Smith did here in Alberta, is really cool. We still have so far to go. We've barely scratched the surface, but I'm quite an optimist. So I'm actually really happy to see. The most important thing is that people have these discussions. I have faith that if we do, people will come to some more moderate conclusion. Because like you said earlier, I do think it is only like 15% that are really, really radical. And everybody else does want to get along for the most part, as long as they're not lied to and forced to lie.
It's a good thing you were strategic. Crowd, who are the disruptors, are also strategic.
Mm-hmm.
So they will do anything and everything to disrupt your platform. So yeah, it's a good thing you got ahead of that.
Yeah, we were worried, but the venue we picked was on the outskirts. And yeah, like I said, people got the venue location a few hours ahead of time and went off without a hitch. It was really, it sucks that we have to do that. That's how people do events in Canada now. You don't get the location until a couple hours beforehand and then you go. At least then you're able to meet. And at least then people can't call up the venues and complain or threaten. Because there was a guy, James Lindsay, was trying to come here back last October. In Calgary, he had four venues cancel on him. Until finally they got one and they said, we're not going to tell you till like an hour before. And then we were able to hold it. But it was crazy.
Yeah. I'm a bit sympathetic to people who just feel it's all too much. Every time they turn on the TV or every time they look on their phone, it's just gay, 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 queer, queer, yeah, queer, trans, trans. I'm sympathetic to that because if you think about it, I mean, let's be honest, there's Pride Month in June. There's Trans Awareness Week in November, which includes Transgender Day of Remembrance. There's Coming Out Day on October 11th. Mm-hmm. There's Trans Day of Visibility on the 31st of March every year, which happened to coincide with Easter Sunday this year, really threw people off. I had people contacting me. I was getting phone calls, emails, texts, and they're like, why is this happening? And I'm Wait. Now, this event happens every year, has for the last several years. It's not we've been doing Trans Day of Visibility for 30 years. Mm-hmm. It's a newish event within the last decade, maybe. And so it just so happened to coincide with Easter. And they were, oh, okay. I just basically talked them off the ledge. I'm sympathetic to that because it reminds me of that interview. There was an interview with Morgan Freeman and somebody, I think, on 60 Minutes. And they said to him, do you want a Black History Month? And he's, no, I don't. And he said to the guy, well, are you Jewish? Do you want a Jewish History Month? And he's, no, I don't. See, but we don't want just a month. We want a week here and a day here and a day here and a day. Mm-hmm. So I get it. And then, of course, there's most major metropolitan areas have LGBT film festival. And yes, who knows what time of the year that is. I'm not saying don't do those. I go see those films here. They're part of our fringe in Orlando. I enjoy some of those things, but I'm also sympathetic. Mm-hmm. I'm also sympathetic to the members of our LGBT community who don't go to Pride events anymore because it's just hedonistic debauchery in their minds. And it hasn't always been that way. It hasn't always been a Mardi Gras parade. I remember when they were liberation marches back in the 80s. Things have changed and they weren't corporatized until the 90s. Mm-hmm. So things are different. So I'm sensitive to those issues, both sides.
Me too. I think it's only human nature that if this is just shoved in your face all the time, that's going to be the way to rebel. The new counterculture is going to be to be against this stuff.
That's right.
But I actually have been hearing a lot about how younger demographics are getting really sick of it because they're in school. They look at the gay and trans kids getting all these this special attention and they get, I don't know if jealous is the right word, but they just get sick of it.
Maybe
and
envious,
Envy, yeah, I can kind of understand. You're actually not doing us a favor by putting the spotlight on us and constantly focusing on us. And especially in Canada, because we've got Pride Month, but then it's a Pride season. The Pride Parade here in Calgary, it's not till the end of August, early September. Every city across the way, it's like that. It's just nonstop rainbows.
Yeah, in Orlando, our Pride is in October. They just celebrated all June. Yeah, right. And then we're going to have it again in October. Yes. Yeah, it's too hot to have a Pride Parade in June here. Jacksonville, I think, was in February one year. And
oh my goodness.
Fort Lauderdale's the same. Just want to say as a clinician really quickly that it's just going back to another topic that I think it's completely irresponsible and unacceptable to use suicide as a threat mechanism. You should lose your job because people are going to kill themselves, or repeating the story over and over again that young people who are trans are so fragile that they're going to take their own lives at any distress is completely unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And we should not be talking about it so casually like that. We throw around suicide the same way we throw around racist and Nazi and fascist now. They have no meaning at all. Mm-hmm. Homophobe means nothing anymore because I'm called that and I know I'm not. But we should not do that with suicide. That's not a subject that we should treat so callously.
They're scare tactics. One of the things, and I know it has nothing to do with this per se, but in a way, we could say that we're seeing a lot of it, at least, well, I'm going to say we're seeing a lot of it. I will say off the cuff, I'm at a draw here. I don't know who to vote for. I really don't. I'm not saying that I would vote for Biden or that I would vote for Trump. What was disturbing was the attempt on his life. And so I said something to my son, Ari, and Ari, and I'm a Democrat. I'm very open about that. But my son, Ari, said to me, well, what do you expect? All anybody has ever heard is how he's going to kill everybody. He's going to demonize everyone. He's going to make sure no one has any human rights. And he said, what do you think happens to the young mind? And are we surprised? Really? Are we that surprised? I'm not. And the same could be said about any other issue that we hear and see and experience. These scare tactics are thrown about so cavalier. And
the rhetoric is out of control.
Oh, yeah.
We have to be accountable. We have to be really careful what we're saying. People hang on to that. People are easily scared these days.
Oh, they are. Yeah, that was one of the main things at that roundtable when they kept saying that the minister and the premier were responsible for kids' deaths, basically. One of the few things I got to say in the midst of all this, I think to lay that at your feet, minister, and to lay that at the feet of the premier is so irresponsible and quite frankly, so disgusting. And the guy who was yelling that, he leans out to me and he goes, you could say that to my face. Yeah, I think what you're doing is quite disgusting to be using these threats of childhood suicide to be demanding that they resign. And that level of rhetoric, it makes me scared for those politicians, because if people truly believe that because of these policies, kids are just in droves, just going to off themselves, starts to look rational. Well, we should get rid of them, right?
Well, they'll say it's happening, but they can't show the evidence of it.
No,
there is no evidence of it. But they don't care because they have anecdotal stories. I read a story or I knew one person. It doesn't matter about anecdotes. What matters is the research. Is there evidence? And there's no evidence to support that. Mm-mm. So,
no.
But it works because it works on families too. It's the old adage of, would you rather have a dead daughter or a live trans son? Speaking clinically, that should never be uttered to a parent.
No,
it's from a provider. Abusive. It's unacceptable.
Yeah.
Well, Eva, it's been so wonderful having you on the show and hearing all about you and your work that you're doing. Thank you so much for coming and giving us a glimpse of what's happening in Canada. That's always fun.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It was so much fun.
It has been a really good conversation. And we hope to have you back once you have your little bundle.
I would love that. Yeah, I've got about 3.5 months to go. So after that, I would love to speak to you guys again.
Well, and there's other good news. You want to share it?
My wedding?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I'm getting married. It's a shotgun wedding. I'm getting married on the 27th.
I love it. Because you said you've been together 17 years and then you call it a shotgun wedding.
Because I'm pregnant. We met so young. And so that's why into our 20s we were already together for so long, and so we started our lives, and we always said, oh, when we have a kid we'll get married to make it all very secure and stable and all this. And then the first day I got the positive pregnancy test, we're like, oh my god, we have to plan a wedding. So thankfully we pulled it off. Things seem to be mostly all set. I'm waiting for the rings to arrive on time, and then I get the last trimester to wait for my baby and relax. So yeah, lots of exciting stuff happening.
Well, congratulations.
Very cool. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
This is Dr. On with Xander Kagg. And our guest this hour was Eva Kirilova, who is a writer from Calgary, Alberta. And we hope that you enjoyed the show. Until next time, thank you for listening.